Happy Memorial Day! It is a special weekday holiday edition of the Sound Off here on SEScoops.com for Monday, May 30th, 2011. I am the Solemn Monster, and first things first, I want to just wish everybody a happy Memorial Day if you are celebrating it stateside here. It's a beautiful day here in New York, as it has been the last couple of days, but unfortunately for yours truly, I've not been able to enjoy that. So I just wanted to thank everybody who sent messages and comments and whatnot about the thing I posted about a couple days ago on Twitter. Everything's okay. You know, it's an issue. It's being taken care of. I had a little bit of a relapse or a flare-up of the throat issue that I mentioned several months back was just killing me. And unfortunately, it kind of came back again. So I've been out of commission the last couple of days. I haven't even been able to see the light of day. And it's been not fun times for me. I'm actually quite bitter right now, so hopefully your holiday is going a lot better than mine. I also want to thank everybody who sent in feedback on last week's show, episode 160, in the Randy Savage tribute. I got a lot of really overwhelming positive feedback from you guys on that, and I really appreciate that. It was a fun show to do in terms of being able to go back and kind of relive, in a way, the career of Randy Savage, because there were so many great matches and so many great moments. That part of it was fun. Obviously, doing the show itself and having to eulogize, you know, one of the stars that you grew up with was anything but fun. It was, you know, a little emotional, but I got nothing but positive feedback from everybody, and I really appreciate that. And there'll be some more Randy Savage news a little bit later on in the show. The other thing also is, you know, being in this state this weekend, and by state, I don't mean the state of New York. I mean the state that I've been in. The last couple of days, haven't been able to go out, haven't been able to really do much. Like I said, very bitter, very angry right now. And one of the positives is I've been able to take advantage of a subscription that I had that, and take your mind out of the gutter, I'm not going there, but I have a subscription to WWE's online Classics On Demand service. This is separate from the video on demand service they have on our cable provider here. And the online version of it, I think it's about $3.95 a month. I've had a subscription to it apparently for quite some time. I had almost completely forgotten about it, and was able to sample a few different matches and kind of watch some WWF stuff and some WCW stuff. And for whatever reason, I said, you know what, I'm in the mood to watch some old WCW Saturday night shows. So we'll just pick a random one to watch. And we ended up watching a WCW Saturday night episode from 1995. And the reason I'm mentioning this is it was a pretty ho-hum episode. There was nothing overly special about it. In fact, it was actually kind of lackluster, but I still enjoyed it. Any of that stuff, really, from the early to mid-90s compared to what we see now is it's just like night and day. It's unbelievable. But there was one thing on this show that I was not expecting, and it actually came towards the end of the episode. It was something that happened before one of the scheduled matches, and I actually have the audio from it. It's not very long. It's actually kind of brief. I kind of spliced it together. I'll play the audio a little bit later on in the show. It had me in stitches. It was the only thing, in all honesty, that really put a smile on my face this entire weekend, and really got like a belly laugh out of me. So I'll play that audio a little bit later on, and of all things, it came from WCW Saturday Night 1995. But the other thing that actually did put a smile on my face, I want to just mention that here really quick, is give a shout out to my friend, my buddy, my pal, my compadre, Amish Cousin Simon, and his tag team partner, Amish Cousin Cyrus, the Mighty Mennonites, became the new WUW Tag Team Champions this past Saturday at Gleason's Gym in Brooklyn, New York. Again, WUW is the promotion here in the Brooklyn area run by Johnny Rods, who, of course, is a member of the WWE Hall of Fame. The Mighty Mennonites became the new tag champions at their May Day and May event on Saturday. I'm kind of pissed about it, in all honesty. I had hoped to be there in person. Obviously, I was not able to be there. I did congratulate the one half of the new champions shortly after his victory and hope to see him soon. So, congrats on the tag title victory. You know what they say, it's one thing to win the title. It's a completely different thing to defend it. I've been watching enough wrestling on TV now for 20-something years. I've heard that over and over and over again. So I guess we'll find out shortly if that's the truth or not. All right, so here's the plan. My voice is not exactly where it needs to be. It's a lot better than it was a couple of days ago, but it's still not 100%. So if it sounds a little wonky, you'll know why. I don't want to talk too long here. I had a whole batch of notes about Raw from last Monday. I'm going to really try to condense it down because by the time most people listen to this show, since they're probably out celebrating the holiday right now, this week's Raw will be old news, let alone last week's Raw. So I'm going to touch on that very briefly, and I want to just start with Over the Limit, big pay-per-view last week. Of course, I'm joking. But it was a pay-per-view last week, and didn't get very good reviews. Unlike last month's show, which I've already forgotten the name of last month's show, Extreme Rules, which, if I remember correctly, got some pretty good reviews. But again, these pay-per-views, nobody cares. They're not promoted well, so nobody buys them. If they're great, nobody sees them. If they're bad, well, you almost go into it expecting it to be bad. This was not a great show. I actually did somehow finagle my way into being able to watch most of it. Bret Hart, of course, came out, got the biggest pop on the show. Randy Orton and Christian, I give them all the credit in the world. They went out there. They had a match that was even better than their match on SmackDown a couple of weeks ago. Totally stole the show. The only other note I really jotted down about this show, which should tell you about how important the show it was about something Booker T said in the main event about John Cena. Booker T was making a comment, and I actually kind of phased out the end part of his quote, because it was when I heard the first part of his quote, my brain kind of shut off. I couldn't believe what I had just heard, but I was happy I did hear it. He actually made a comment during the main event. He said, in reference to John Cena, he said, with limited skills and ability, and I'm pretty sure after that, the point he was probably trying to make was that in spite of having limited skills and in spite of having little ability, John Cena somehow manages to persevere. I think that was the context of his quote. The only thing I could think after I heard that was Booker T, an honest announcer. It's a rare thing that you hear these days, because there's no way that Vince McMahon told Booker T to say that. You see, that's my point. I mean, in all honesty, when was the last time you heard any announcer, be it Michael Cole or anybody else in WWE, refer to their top guy, their world champion, as a person with limited skills and ability? I just could not believe that when I heard that. That totally made the show for me, but unfortunately, it was still shit. What was not shit, got to talk about this, was Tough Enough. You know, as I'm recording the show, it is Monday of the week after. So tonight, I think, tonight might actually be the last kind of, quote, regular episode of Tough Enough before the live finale. But last week's show was great. I thoroughly enjoyed Tough Enough last week. I really enjoyed this whole run of Tough Enough, and I've been kind of debating in my head whether or not I've actually enjoyed this incarnation of Tough Enough more than the original incarnation from 10 years ago or 12 years ago, whenever it was. It's just been a really, really great show. You know, if you're not into the house drama and that kind of bullshit, I don't really see why you have a problem with this show, because to me, the last couple of weeks, a lot of that stuff has really been toned down. You know, you really have not had issues in the house. As people are being picked off, it really is coming down to drama in the ring and in the gym or amongst the trainers. And it's just really great stuff. So last week's show, we had The Rock was the big guest star. Well, I should take that back. We had The Rock, and they had James Rodet from the USA Network show Psych. And I believe I may have said on the show last week, who gives a fuck? So I will say it again. Who gives a fuck? They had him on the show basically because they had the remaining contestants on the show give a tour of Hollywood Boulevard. I think it was Hollywood Boulevard. With the understanding that this was happening because they wanted to see how they performed in front of a group of people. They basically were testing their public speaking abilities, which is no doubt very important if you want to be a WWE performer on TV. You have to know how to perform not only in front of the cameras, but in front of a building full of 10,000 people. I get that. What that has to do with James Rodé, I think we all know the reason he was there. You could have taken any starving actor in the entire world and put them in the same role, and they would have been as effective, if not more so, than this guy. This guy was shit. But it was entertaining to see them, the contestants, try to be tour guides. Some were better than others. Anyway, that was the shit part of the show. The rest of the show was really the best part. The Rock was there, and he was awesome. And I'm not just saying The Rock was awesome because he was The Rock. The Rock was awesome in part because he actually did what I think no other person that they've invited on the show in all these weeks has done. Rey Mysterio didn't do it. Big Show. Again, if they did it, they cut all their footage out. So in fairness, perhaps that's what happened. The Rock, though, he stuck around. You know, he didn't just show up to do his thing and then leave. He showed up. He actually got in the ring to spar with these people. He actually got in the ring to wrestle them. And then he stuck around. And again, he was more productive than any of the other superstars that have appeared all season long. You know, he critiqued their promos. He even cut individual promos on each of them, the highlight of the show, except for AJ, who he actually liked. And of all people who were left on this show this week, AJ is the one who actually won the promo challenge. Unfortunately, it was not enough to save him, as he was one of the people cut at the end of the show. It was him and Christina who got the boot at the end of the episode, which leaves Big Andy with Jeremiah and Luke. And by the way, what the hell is Andy thinking defending Christina and saying that she's going to be a WWE superstar one day? It sounded to me like, you know, this married guy, he talks about his faith and his, you know, his wife and his kid. I think he has another kid on the way. And the only thing I could think of watching him standing there defending her the way that he was he's trying to get in her pants. I mean, come on. He's got to be trying to get in her pants. Anyway, AJ, he cut a hell of a promo. Really enjoyed it. He obviously was the best of the bunch. But if we're being honest with ourselves here, he doesn't look like a WWE superstar. He looks like a fan of a WWE superstar. And that's basically what the trainers and what Steve Austin said, and that's why he's gone. So, there you go. But, again, you know, the thing about The Rock, just to go back to him for a second, if I can, when he mocked Christina for her soft speaking tone, I just lost it, because he's absolutely right. She's a cute girl, and I think we all know why she was on the show, not just because she's a good-looking girl, but because she's the sister of a current WWE diva. She is the sister of Alicia Fox. But she has no business being on TV, let's be honest. She sounds like a Valley girl, or any other girl back in college, for that matter. And it just annoys the fuck out of me. Every time she would open her mouth, she may be a really nice girl, but she just annoyed the fuck out of me. And so, yeah, she's gone. We have three people left. And this show has been a complete win. And I haven't heard back yet whether or not there's going to be a second season. I think it's still being determined. If I had to place a bet, I would say it'll be back. I know that the ratings it was doing was not quite as strong as what the show that had previously been airing before Raw was doing, but you know what? It's original content for your network. If you want to move it, maybe next season it airs after Raw instead of before Raw. I actually wouldn't mind that, but yeah, I just wanted to mention that because Tough Enough last week was great, and I believe after Raw tonight, the episode that airs is last week's show, so I just wanted to mention that, because if you didn't see last week's show and you were kind of on the fence about it, two thumbs up. You definitely want to check out the replay tonight after Raw. And speaking of Raw, like I said, I don't want to spend too much time on last week's show because it's already old news, but there were some important things that went down, and I'm going to try to condense my notes here as we go along, so just bear with me here, because I did take a lot of them. First things first, the first thing I noticed about last week's show was that R-Truth is quite awesome. I know. I know. It's not something that you've heard me say before. I'm sure you didn't notice it yourself. But yes, R-Truth is rather awesome in his new role. He came out in the opening segment last week, and he blew me away again. You know, this is probably the fourth or fifth consistent performance now. Week after week, he continues to impress. They've really stumbled on gold with this guy in this role. You know, it's unbelievable how many years they had him under contract in a babyface role that, while he was good, he was not exceptional. And in a way, it kind of reminds me of Tough Enough. You know, one of the things the trainers complain about a lot is that you can be good, but you're not here to be good. You're here to be exceptional. You're here to be wonderful in some way. You have to somehow separate yourself from everybody else. And R-Truth, for so many years, was, you know, one of those cookie-cutter babyface performers. You know, he came out, he had the song that people like to sing along with. And he was always a good in-ring performer, but he didn't really do anything that really blew you away. And as a heel, I think because there's no other heel in the company right now quite like him, he just stands out so much. You cannot help but take notice of what he's doing. And I think it's fantastic. And, you know, when he went face-to-face with Cena in the ring last week, and he used that "I want my son back" line, which, of course, you know, mocking Cena's, Cena's legendary movie. I thought I heard some people in the crowd say, "But I still don't know how," which was amazing. You may remember that from those annoying fucking commercials that kept airing when Cena's movie came out. So I thought that was great. I got feedback from people who were, in some cases, offended by the Big Show angle, where presumably it was Ricardo Rodriguez who kind of hit him with a car. And you know, I barely even remember the angle now a week later. I haven't even given it much thought. All I remember is what really offended me about this angle was how long it dragged on for. This thing went on for fucking ever last week. And seemingly it featured a cameo in the background by Kurt Angle, or some dude in a suit that looked a lot like Kurt Angle. That's all I kept thinking. Why is Kurt Angle in this segment? The other thing that really bothered me about this segment was it seemed like they were teasing a potential breakup already between Del Rio and Ricardo, which would be about the worst idea in the world if that's the direction they're actually going in. Now, I hope and assume that in the end that's not what happens here. Perhaps it was a swerve. Could just be a situation where Del Rio treats Ricardo much like, you know, Ted DiBiase used to treat Virgil. So there's no imminent breakup, but he just treats him like shit. Which is fine, because as long as they keep the two of them together, I'm okay with that. Now, some people thought it was classless on WWE's part to do a car accident angle a few days after Randy Savage was in a car accident and died. To be honest, the thought never even crossed my mind until I went online and saw people posting about it. I mean, it's all a bit of a stretch. And let's be honest, it's not like WWE did this on purpose. This segment greatly offended me, but not because of that. It offended me because of how much it fucking sucked. Let's just be honest with each other here. That segment was atrocious. And really, all car accident angles in wrestling are so over the top and unrealistic, they should never be done ever, at any point. I mean, the only time I've seen it done where it actually meant something and looked realistic, because it actually was to a degree, was when Eddie Gilbert hit Jerry Lawler with a car on Memphis TV back in 1990. I remember reading that in his book, Lawler said that Gilbert had a warrant out for his arrest until Lawler went to the cops and smartened him up about the fact that it was all just for a show. But, you know, again, wrestling back then, very different than it is now. The world back then was very different than it is now. I don't think that would happen today necessarily. Also, you know, it reminds me of, in a way, the lawn dart incident on Nitro when Kevin Nash threw Rey Mysterio into the side of that trailer. Now, that wasn't a car accident angle, but that's another example of an angle that people were calling the cops because they thought that there was some sort of all-out gang attack going on next door to, I think it was Universal at the time, down in Florida. But in any event, car accident angles, aside from that one down in Memphis, which was done well enough that people actually bought into it, they just should not be done in wrestling. It just never works. It's stupid. It's too phony and unrealistic. And, yeah, this one sucked. The karma stuff, you know, I had jotted down some notes about it as I saw it on the show. You know, what I would have said about it is irrelevant now that we know that she's pregnant. She's going to be off television for at least 9 months. The company is not happy about it, but what the hell are you going to do? I mean, really, what are you going to do? Vince McMahon, is he going to go up to Awesome Kong backstage and just start shouting, "Abort! Abort! Abort!" I mean, really, what's he going to do? So, best of luck to her. Hope everything goes well. Apparently, she's going to be on Raw tonight, so probably by the time you listen to the show, to do some sort of promo or interview segment where she speaks for the first time and addresses, not her being pregnant, I assume, but why she collapsed to her knees in the ring last week and started sobbing and crying. Again, my theory about it, I think I mentioned this on Facebook when we were going back and forth, me and some of you guys, is that, you know, it has to do with her upbringing. And, you know, she was surrounded in the ring last week by a bunch of pretty divas, and it brought back some bad childhood memories, and so that's why she started crying. That's my theory. In light of this new news, what they may do tonight on Raw, I guess we'll find out. The Ms. Alex Riley stuff made Alex Riley look really strong last week. I think that goes without saying, even if it did make the Miz look really weak. You know, the only problem I had with it is that Miz looked like such a tool at the Over the Limit pay-per-view the night before Raw last week that, you know, he couldn't even beat John Cena with a man advantage. It was 2-on-1 the entire match. Cena got his ass kicked, but he still couldn't get the job done. Not only that, but Miz quits in that match as soon as he gets trapped in the STF, and he starts squealing like a little girl. You know, in all honesty, he should have been the one laying that brutal beatdown on Alex Riley last week. However, that being said, I applaud WWE for doing that. I mean, how many times do we complain about them needing to put over younger talent? And God knows Cena and Orton can never be made to look weak and get beaten by anybody. Here's a main event guy in The Miz who they used to help get Riley over, you know, getting his ass absolutely handed to him. And I think it was really effective, just really great stuff. It made an impact, and it left an impression. That's really all you can ask for. Of course, the key to all this, as it always is the follow-up and what they do the week after, but I guess we'll get those answers soon enough. Really, you got to give it a couple of weeks to see what they do with it. I still find it quite odd that Alex Riley got drafted to SmackDown, and, you know, perhaps this is now the way for him to move to SmackDown and branch out on his own, but again, you have a draft. The purpose of the draft is to position people on one brand or the other. And Alex Riley got drafted to SmackDown now, what, 3-4 weeks ago? And I don't think he's made a single goddamn appearance on that show. So, just again, another example of why that draft means absolutely nothing. The Randy Savage tribute video was really emotional stuff. It was set to The Scientist by Coldplay, which is a great, great song. I think Major League Baseball actually used that song in their own highlight video, excuse me, at the end of the World Series. I don't remember the year. It was several years ago, but it's a really good song. And I don't know if anybody else noticed this, but when Jerry Lawler was doing the intro to that segment, you know, speaking very solemnly and getting all serious, he kind of slipped and said that Randy Savage is a, quote, true Hall of Famer no matter what. And I'm glad he said it, because he's absolutely right, but there's no way Vince McMahon told him to say that, so I wonder if he got his ear chewed off for that. If you didn't see the video on Raw last week or SmackDown, you need to go find a copy of it, because on WWE.com, they edited out the Coldplay music with some other kind of generic theme, which is similar to what they did. You know, they did that with Eddie Guerrero when he died, you may remember, on Raw the night after. They aired a tribute video to Guerrero set to the song Hurt by Johnny Cash, which is another favorite of mine. And that song, well, first of all, that's a Nine Inch Nails song. But the song, the cover of Hurt that Johnny Cash did is probably one of the all-time saddest songs I've ever heard in my life. And that video was great for what it was. But again, if you missed the first airing on Raw, I think even when that video aired on SmackDown, the week that Eddie died, it was even edited off of SmackDown. Because, again, they're not going to pay money for the rights to this mainstream music, you know, to then show it on DVDs and things of that nature. So that's just the way it is. But if you can find a copy of it on YouTube or somewhere else with the original music, watch it. Even without the music, watch it. It's a really very well done video piece. I was starting to get a little angry by that point of the show because I was almost convinced at that point we had not gotten the video. And we were running out of time. I know they were heading into the main event, and all we had gotten up to that point was a still photo, a graphic at the top of the show. And for a split second, I actually thought to myself, you know what, here I was giving WWE credit. I was convinced they were going to do the right thing, and they're not even going to show a video for this man. But then they did, and it was really well done. So no Hall of Fame announcement. Not that I really expected it, but it would have been nice. And it's not to say that Savage still can't go into the Hall of Fame next year. Again, I would still put him in there. I think if you know you put him in and you still want to have somebody else headline, that's fine. But the man deserves it, and that video was quite fitting, I think, of a man of his stature. It was pretty long, too. I think the whole video from start to finish probably went about 4 minutes, maybe a little more than that, between 4 or 5 minutes. So really well done. And also, what I appreciated was CM Punk's tribute. Punk was clearly a big Macho Man fan. He had been posting about it, very sad messages on his Twitter after the news first broke. But Punk came out for that main event on Raw Monday night last week wearing classic Randy Savage gear. In fact, that gear would probably be most recognizable from Savage's match with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat at WrestleMania 3. It was the same exact ring attire that Savage wore to the Pontiac Silverdome. The pink tights with the three white stars on the front. The only difference is Punk's gear said CM Punk on the back. And obviously back in the day, Savage's gear said Macho Man on the back. But Punk had the yellow boots and with the yellow and white trim and all that stuff. So really, really cool to see that. Even Bret Hart, who was the special referee for the main event and actually cost CM Punk the match and put him in a sharpshooter, said on his Twitter a couple of days later that he really appreciated Punk's kind of shout-out to the Macho Man. So that was really cool. The only other thing I want to say about Raw, and I got to get this off my chest, and this was one of my reasons for having to do this podcast this week no matter what. I've noticed this for a while, and I've ignored it, but I just cannot ignore it anymore. John Cena must stop calling spots during his matches. He is so loud and obvious when he's doing it that it takes me completely out of the match, and it's been happening for some time now. Stop calling spots so loudly. I know it's TV and everything's mic'd up, and on occasion I'll hear other guys calling a spot here and there, but Cena is the absolute worst offender of them all. You are a professional. You are the top star in the company. You've been doing this now for over 8 years. Enough already. Stop calling spots so loudly. I can't possibly be the only person who's noticed this. It's so annoying. Anyway, Cena and Rey Mysterio beat Punk and Truth in the main event. Cena did this giant leap for joy after Rey got the pinfall. And between that and Randy Orton's vertical leap on SmackDown the week before that, when he did that really weird-looking jump after his match with Mark Henry, I'm starting to wonder if that really is coffee that they're serving up backstage at catering. I'm starting to wonder about that. Some more Randy Savage notes here. The autopsy that they had performed on Savage came back inconclusive on the exact cause of death. Toxicology results are still pending. That could take about 4 to 6 weeks before we know for sure exactly what killed him. But it's sounding more and more like it was not the impact from the accident itself. If there's something that we're not aware of that killed him, we'll find out. Otherwise, it may well have been the heart attack itself, because it doesn't look like it was the impact of the actual crash that killed the Macho Man. He had requested no public service, only a private ceremony for family, and asked to be cremated and have his ashes spread by his favorite tree, which is also where the ashes of his beloved dog, Hercules, were spread several years ago. So that I believe that's already taken place. Vince McMahon, actually, of all people, penned a short article in the latest issue of Time Magazine. I believe it's the issue dated June 6th, but don't hold me to that. The first few paragraphs are free and available online for you to view, and then you have to pay for it. So if you want to read the whole thing, you got to pay. Well, I got a copy of the whole thing anyway. And it really isn't much longer than the free portion that they show you online. It's really not a long article. I think it's under 200 words, which is pretty much, I think, on course with what that specific feature in Time usually is. It's not much longer than 200 words. Vince basically just called him one of the building blocks of the old World Wrestling Federation and a guy who knew how to be a star. He doesn't say anything negative about him, not that you would expect him to in that type of forum. It's a nice piece. I guess my guess is they came to Vince because Vince would be one of those people that knew Savage better than anybody else. He worked for him for so many years. They were very close at one point, whatever may or may not have happened later on between them. And just a very nice, very classy, well-done piece. So just wanted to mention that to the people who asked me if I had read the entire thing. I did, and that's pretty much what you take away from it after reading it. Now, the other thing I wanted to comment on here, I got a little something to say about one Brian Knobbs. Now, Brian Knobbs, for those of you who don't know, is one half of the Nasty Boys tag team, former WWF tag team champions. And actually, they had a brief run, I guess, last year in TNA as well, thanks to Brian Knobbs' best friend, one of his best friends. Actually, he probably is. Hulk Hogan probably is Brian Knobbs' best friend. Knobbs is one of Hogan's friends, one of many friends that Hogan has. My guess is Brian Knobbs doesn't have very many friends, so he clings to people like Hulk Hogan. So, apparently Brian Knobbs has managed to piss off a lot of people this week. In fact, he pissed off a lot of people the day that Randy Savage died at a wrestling convention. Apparently, a lot of people, including Sean Waltman, who has talked about this loudly and openly on his Twitter page, saw Brian Knobbs basically openly mocking the death of Randy Savage by clutching his chest and saying, "Ooh, yeah," and pretending to have a heart attack. This, mind you, was less than 24 hours after Savage had died, presumably from a heart attack, although we don't know for sure. So, needless to say, this has angered a lot of Randy Savage fans, but it's also angered a lot of people in the wrestling business. It's angered a lot of Brian Knobbs' fellow wrestling compatriots, if you will. My throat is not 100%. I'm not going to yell. I'm not going to scream. I'm not going to go crazy. I have something that I'd like to share with you, Brian Knobbs, if you're listening to the show, which I'm sure you're not. You're probably too busy stuffing your face with Doritos right now. But if you could put the bag of Doritos down for just a moment, I do have something I would like to share. They say that what goes around comes around. And judging by the size of your ever-expanding waistline, I'd say that what goes around probably won't make it back around until about May of 2016. Now, inevitably, when the day comes that you yourself keel over from a massive heart attack, which you know is coming, let's see how many public displays of affection we see from people not named Hogan or Beefcake. So, Brian Knobbs, you are a disgusting, foul-smelling, loud-mouthed, pus-filled tub of human goo that deserves not one breath more out of me. And that's all I have to say about Brian Knobbs. There's a couple of other quick notes here. Averno, one of the big stars from the CMLL promotion down in Mexico, and also one of Mystico, now Sin Cara's great opponents when he was down there, apparently has signed a deal to come to WWE and feud with Sin Cara on the SmackDown brand. Even CMLL was not aware of this news until the news broke really only in the last day or two. The plan is to bring him in because WWE is... Well, they've been a little unhappy with the matches that Sin Cara has been having on TV so far. You don't say. You bring a guy in who was awesome at that Lucha Libre style of wrestling for how many years now? You completely have him bypass your developmental promotion, and you put him on TV, and you expect him to be able to wrestle your, quote, WWE style flawlessly? Incredible. Incredible. So I guess Averno comes in now to feud with Sin Cara, make him look good on TV, and my question becomes at that point, if that happens, what happens to Averno? Doesn't bode well for him, in my opinion, although I'm sure he must have gotten a sweet deal, so congrats to him on that. I guess we'll see what happens to him. You know, he's had a lot of success down there. He's a big name down there, and there's been some talk of him. Apparently, he was scheduled to, and this is not confirmed, but he was scheduled to participate next month in a match where he was to have lost his mask. He is also a masked wrestler. And I don't know now that the cat's out of the bag if CMLL may change that plan or not, although I'm sure when he comes to WWE, my guess would be that they would not want him wearing a mask. I don't know that they want two masked wrestlers, you know, feuding with one another, especially if neither one of them know English very well. So we'll see what happens with that. Mick Foley caught a lot of heat last week for making a joke on Twitter. He was in a Twitter exchange with his buddy The Rock. Actually, I think what happened is The Rock doesn't really tweet too much back and forth with other wrestlers, but he made a tweet about the fact that their I Quit match from the 1999 Royal Rumble. In fact, I don't know why he made that tweet, but he was talking about the Rumble match, and Rock said that in the famous I Quit match, I handcuffed Mick Foley and bashed him 14 times with a steel chair, and he said, he bled, I won. So in response, Foley responded to The Rock and said, maybe so, but 2 days later, I trapped The Rock under a pallet of beer kegs to win the WWE strap in an empty arena match, a.k.a. TNA House Show. I laughed. Come on, just cut the guy some slack. You know he's right. I mean, yeah, if you're in TNA, I don't take that comment very lightly, but come on. It was funny. Finally, I got linked to an article on the comedyworkshops.com website a couple of days ago that I thought was worth mentioning here. It talks about John Morrison seeking out a comedy coach by the name of Judy Carter in an attempt to be funnier in the ring, funnier in interviews, and just kind of hone his craft a little bit when it comes to his promo work. And it's a very short article. It's a blog from Judy Carter herself talking about her first meeting with Morrison, who I take it she did not know before this, but now she knows a lot about him. And I just wanted to mention this because I think it's worth commending John Morrison for it. You know, right now he's recovering from neck surgery. He'll probably be back in action at some point next month. He's not going to be out of action for as long as had originally been feared because the surgery was not that extensive, but you know, it's awesome to see that in his time off, he's being productive and he's trying to improve himself. I have railed on him numerous times on this show, not because I dislike the guy. Like I've said before, I don't hate John Morrison. He's amazing to watch in the ring, but I just can't buy into any time he has a microphone in his hand, I cannot buy into what he is saying. He just has this very stiff, phony, unbelievable delivery. And to see him going out on his own, trying to, you know, improve his game and up his game and get better at the one thing that obviously he thinks is a weakness as well. So I say ha to all the people who emailed me and mocked me and said that I was being somehow disrespectful or, you know, John Morrison is great at promos. How dare you? Well, obviously John Morrison ain't that great at promos because if he was, he wouldn't be seeking out the help of a coach. But he is, much like The Miz did. Now, The Miz, on his days off, of which he doesn't really have that many, it was well known, was going to take lessons in improv. And people actually credit his improvement over time on promos to where he's become one of the best promo guys in the company because he went out on his own and took those improv lessons, and it really helped him. And I applaud Morrison for doing the same thing, and we'll see when he comes back in, you know, a couple months from now, maybe 6 months from now, if we see any sort of improvement. But I say thumbs up to the guy. I think that's really cool of him to do that. By the way, I should probably also mention this since I played that clip from Bill Mitchell, one of our listeners, last week, explaining his issues with diverticulitis and gastrointestinal illness in the past as it relates to Brock Lesnar's situation. We found out a couple of days ago, apparently the news came out, that Brock Lesnar did in fact undergo surgery to remove 12 inches from his intestine. Apparently he's got a lot of incisions, but otherwise is doing okay. And the talk is that he can be back fighting as early as the early part of 2012, which doesn't mean he will be fighting at the beginning of 2012, but just the fact that they say it is possible for him to be back training and fighting by then has to be considered a good sign. They haven't really released any other information about the surgery, other than to say that 12 inches of what I believe to be his large intestine were removed. He is resting comfortably and recuperating, and certainly all the best to Brock. That is a major surgery, and hopefully he can come back from it. All right, so remember earlier on I was telling you about the episode of WCW Saturday Night I was watching from 1995. Specifically, it was October 21st, 1995. This would have been the week before that month's Halloween Havoc pay-per-view. And I'm sitting here, I'm feeling like crap, and I'm watching this show on my laptop. And it's a pretty ho-hum show. If I remember, there were appearances by, I think, Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Lex Luger, and Arn Anderson came at the end of the show. He did a promo hyping the tag match where it was going to be him and Brian Pillman against Sting and Flair. This is probably going to be the bazillionth time when Ric Flair turned on Sting. But towards the end of the episode was supposed to be a match between Johnny B. Badd, or as some of you may remember him, Marvelous Mark Merrow, or the Wild Man Mark Merrow, against Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, who was still wrestling at this point. And I was never a huge fan of Mr. Wonderful, and quite frankly, I found him difficult to understand sometimes. Not quite sure why. But he was doing this gimmick at the time where when he would come down to the ring, he would carry a mirror in his hand, and he was constantly looking at himself in the mirror. And if I remember correctly, and I wasn't a huge WCW fan at the time, but I think there may have been some sort of storyline where he lost confidence in himself, and Gary Spivey was involved in the angle, and he was the one who was trying to kind of give Mr. Wonderful this big ego boost and kind of bring him back to the Mr. Wonderful that he once was. And anyway, Orndorff comes down to the ring for the match, and of course he's looking at himself in the mirror. And he gets in the ring, and the match hasn't started yet, and the referee's telling him to put the mirror down, and he just refuses to. He's not done yet, he's still looking at himself. And the sequence of events that unfold at this point, perhaps in my drugged-up state, I found it to be funnier than it actually was. I don't know. I thought it was cute. I laughed. And I've taken some snippets of audio from what happened here. Basically, what happened is Merrow attacks him from behind and knocks Orndorff over the top rope and out of the ring. And when Orndorff hits the floor, he smashes the mirror down, accidentally, of course, onto the ground, and the mirror shatters. And not only does the mirror shatter, but Orndorff's confidence shatters at this point. So I'm just going to play the audio for you. Just enjoy.
Mr. Wonderful's dead! Oh! He broke his mirror! Uh-oh! Whoa, doggy! Look at it! Let's hear what he said.
Oh, no! 7 years of bad luck!
7 years of bad luck!
Gary, this is Mr. Wonderful. Something terrible just happened, Gary. I broke my mirror. 7 years bad luck!
That was fantastic. Come on. That was great stuff. Whoever thought of that should have gotten a raise. Obviously, he was a little superstitious, and he just freaked the fuck out. But it's just amazing that of all the crap on this show, which I guess at the time it was a 2 hour, maybe 90 minutes, it was somewhere between 90 minutes and 2 hours a show. And again, it was otherwise a very boring, basic, average show, although I did enjoy it. But all the crap I had to sit through watching this show, and again, I'm feeling I'm down in the dirt, down in the ditch, down in the dump, down in whatever D you want to put in there. And this little angle, it wasn't even a match. The match never happened. This little angle put such a smile on my face and made me laugh. It really made my weekend for me. So I have become a Mr. Wonderful fan now. And actually, we all should be Mr. Wonderful fans because he's going through some tough times right now, I know, battling cancer. And I know we wish him all the best. But this little angle here, I don't know. I thought it was cute. It put a smile on my face. So 7 years bad luck. Don't break any mirrors, people. And don't walk under any ladders either, like Shawn Michaels did at WrestleMania 10. All right, let's get through this mailbag here, because my throat's starting to bark. I want to share a couple more stories of how you guys became wrestling fans, because you guys really have come through above and beyond. I have so many emails I'm backlogged with, I almost don't even want anymore. But of course, you can still email me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. This email comes from one of our longtime listeners here, George, from Tokyo, Japan, writes in. Says, as far as getting into wrestling, started watching when I was a kid with World Class Championship Wrestling, Mid-South, and Georgia Championship Wrestling. Then I fell out of it from about 85 to 89 when I joined the Air Force and was sent to Germany for 2 years. When I came back stateside, I was too busy to actually follow wrestling. I followed a little bit when I was stationed in Japan from 1989 to 1995, but it was all several months old. Then when I went back to the States, I started getting back into it during the big NWO run and the whole Brian Pillman-Steve Austin feud. Around 1998, I went to Alaska and found some fellow wrestling fans who got me into the internet, and we would always split pay-per-views and have been fairly following, I should say, pretty closely ever since. So that comes from George from Tokyo, one of our longtime listeners. So thank you to George for that letter. Another longtime listener here, Ronnie the Rib, writes in, says he became a wrestling fan when he was a kid, of course. Local wrestling used to take place in the Viking Hotel in Newport, Rhode Island. And as a little kid, I got to meet and have my picture taken with the one and only King Kong Bundy. After that, I was completely hooked. Bundamania was running wild back then. I remember that. He also has a question here. When you read the email questions from listeners, do you open them as you read them, or do you read them during the week and just take notes? Well, when I get the emails, I usually check them out as I get them, but I don't usually take notes about emails. If there's something somebody needs me to look up for them, or if there's some story they need me to share, maybe I'll jot down a few notes just so I can remember it. But nope, there's no note-taking usually with the mailbag. I usually just wing it. It's usually better off that way. Okay, this one comes from Ashley in Wales, UK. It says, although I have fuzzy memories of being an Ultimate Warrior fan as a young child, I fully got into wrestling in mid-1998 when my friend showed me the Mankind vs. Undertaker Hell in a Cell match. The amount of legitimate abuse that Foley took in that match really challenged my perceptions of what pro wrestling was and gave me a newfound respect for the business. I've been a fanatic ever since and showed the same match to my partner in order to get her to watch wrestling with me. Keep up the excellent podcast. It entertains me while I jog. Well, all right. That's one way to listen to the sound off, I suppose. Got an email from Billy during the week. He had a question that confounded me, so I actually had to spend time doing a little bit of research on this. He was searching all over and wanted to know if I could find the name of Undertaker's movie that came out between the years of 1997 and 1999. And this puzzled me because I don't remember The Undertaker filming any movie roles in those 2 years. He mentions that in the movie, Undertaker gets stabbed, and then he takes the knife out of his stomach and does his trademark sit-up. And then at some point, he jumps over a balcony. So that's kind of random. So I did a little bit of research here, thanks to the lovely tool that we have at our disposal called the Internet. And what I found was that Undertaker made a guest appearance on a TV show, not a movie, called Poltergeist: The Legacy, which was a TV series on the Sci-Fi Network in the late 90s. And in this role, he played the Soul Chaser Demon. And in fact, I found the exact scene that he was referencing where he gets stabbed in the stomach. Lovely. So anyway, if you're a Poltergeist fan or you want to see The Undertaker get stabbed and then come back to life, because after all, he is already dead, you can find that clip on YouTube, as I did. You know, now that I mentioned that, actually, one of the things I spent time doing this weekend, this lovely, beautiful weekend, if I didn't already mention that, yes, I am bitter, but I found one of my all-time favorite movies. It's a guilty pleasure of mine. It's in the cable rotation, here in New York, anyway, and Suburban Commando has been playing almost nonstop on some of the HBO channels here. And Undertaker is, of course, in that movie. He even gets a credit in the movie, not as Undertaker, but as his real name, Mark Calloway. Him and the other heavy in the movie, who was an actor and not a wrestler, are the two space bounty hunters, I guess they were, that were searching for Hulk Hogan's character in the movie, Ramsey, Shep Ramsey, to be exact. And Undertaker's acting in this movie is something to behold. His facial expressions were actually quite good, and his only speaking role in the entire movie is still as entertaining to me now, I think, as it was 20 years ago.
You're a dead man, Ramsey.
No wonder you guys never talked.
David writes into the podcast here, am I the only one that sort of likes David Otunga, the only current member of Nexus that was there from the beginning and now a two-time unified tag team champion? Yes, Otunga still needs to improve on a few things, but I feel he has the potential to do great things in WWE after the Nexus disbands. Am I the only one that still likes David Otunga, is what David is asking. Yes, you are. Last email here, this one comes from Rob. This is for your How Did I Become a Wrestling Fan question. My earliest recollection is Saturday Night's Main Event in 1988 when it was the Ultimate Warrior against the Super Ninja for the Intercontinental title. I remember as a kid I was big into ninjas in those days. Well, weren't we all? And so I was rather intrigued by this ninja guy who had supposedly mastered various forms of martial arts and became a super ninja. I thought his mask was really cool and thought he was the real deal. I assumed he would make quick work of this bizarre jacked-up reject from Twisted Sister. Didn't quite turn out that way, with Warrior somehow being unaffected by the Super Ninja's super karate chops and kicks. After the Warrior destroyed him in a matter of minutes, I remember my father laughing at the Super Ninja when the match ended, and for years thereafter, whenever he saw Warrior or Hulk Hogan on TV dominating an opponent, my dad would sarcastically suggest that they send in the Super Ninja to take care of them. Ironically enough, I became a Warrior fan and a WWF fan, and quickly after that match. Although I've always wondered whatever became of the Super Ninja. Perhaps I'll have to wait for his induction into the WWE Hall of Fame to find out. Well, if they ever decide to put Rip Oliver in the Hall of Fame, you won't have to wait very long to find out, since he's the guy who played Super Ninja. The other question here that Rob included in the email, with all the talk of the Macho Man being inducted possibly into the Hall of Fame, do you think it would be appropriate to have Miss Elizabeth inducted at the same time, or do you think the spotlight should be shown on the Macho Man alone? I absolutely think it would be appropriate to put the two of them into the Hall of Fame together. You know, even in the video they showed of Savage on Raw last week and SmackDown, there were tons and tons of clips in that video of him and Elizabeth. The two of them went together like peanut butter and jelly. I mean, in a way, you could not have one without the other. I'm not sure that Savage... I mean, Savage would have been a big star no matter what, but how big, I think, is questionable without Elizabeth. You know, she was the yin to his yang. I mean, their act worked perfectly. And she was a huge part of his career, both in front of the camera and behind the scenes. And it's not as though if you put the two of them in together that you're somehow taking the spotlight away from the Macho Man. When you think of the Macho Man and the Macho Man character, you think of Macho Man and Elizabeth. They go hand in hand. They came up at the same time in the same company. They worked together. And she was a huge, huge part of his career. And they should absolutely go into the Hall of Fame together. They both deserve to go in together. And I think it should happen next year. On that note, we're going to cinch up the mailbag here. I'm done. Stick a fork in me. I am finished. You can keep emailing me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. I still have a lot of messages to get to, so if I have not gotten to yours, I promise at some point I will, whether it's direct or over the air. So keep emailing me. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/solemonster, facebook.com/thesolemonster. Those of you who are on either or were the first to find out that there would be no sound off in its regular time slot. I wasn't even sure I was going to be able to do a show, but thankfully I was able to somehow pull it together and get one done, and I'm happy I did. And again, hopefully everybody who is celebrating the extended holiday weekend is having a good time and enjoying themselves, and of course, staying safe, because that's, I say that every week, it's very important. So, we'll be back next week. Hopefully I'll be in much better shape than I am now. I better be, since I have a charity softball game to participate in. And until then, be well, stay safe, enjoy the rest of the weekend. We'll see you right back here next week.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solid Monster sounds off on scoops.com. Thank you.